welcome to Empowering Homeschool Conversations. Thanks for joining us. My name is Peggy Ployer, and I am the founder and CEO of Sped Homeschool, as well as, the host of this show, Empowering Homeschool Conversations. And we are diving into a new topic. It's a new month. This is the first week in June. And June, kind of starting that summertime fun activities. At least I hope you're motivating a little more away from the books and enjoying some of that downtime. But we're going to be talking about learning on the go and out and about and making it fun and something not only your kids need, but you need as parents as well. And so I'm excited to have one of our previous guests back, Travis Lish. Thanks, Travis, for joining us again. I'm excited to have you back on the show.
Yeah, of course. I'm so excited to be here and excited to talk about the principles of making learning fun.
Yes. Yeah. We're specifically going to talk about what is coined as gamification. And maybe you don't even know what that is. Well, you don't have to worry because Travis is going to introduce us to that concept and then kind of pick it apart for us and make it more accessible, because I think you can make it a rather complex thing. And probably there's, I think, research papers and, you know, the complexities of this approach. But we want to make it accessible to you as parents to just, how do I use it? And how do I make my student more engaged with their learning? And so I'm excited for you to share about that, Travis. And if our viewers in the past haven't didn't get to know you in the previous podcast and show that we had, I would love for you to start by just letting us know a little bit about you and why engaged learning is so fundamental to the core of all the things that you do, because it seems to be the driving force behind a lot of the things I've seen you work in.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's interesting. I've been working in education, and specifically alternative education, so homeschooling, private schooling, and entrepreneurship education for about the last 6 years. And the thing that primarily led me in that direction was that for most of my childhood and teenage years, I was someone who would have said that I didn't like learning. And that to me is such a bummer, because I think the truth of it was that I didn't enjoy the structure in which I associated with learning. Right.
Right.
And so as I got a little bit older and realized that I do love to learn and that I find a lot of joy and purpose and meaning in learning, it became one of my life purposes to help young people find a joy in learning. And specifically to find things they love learning about, right? Things that can be associated with their life mission and their life purpose, things that are unique to them. And so, like I said, for the last 6 years, I've been working in one way or another in entrepreneurship education. Last time we met, I was running the Startup Academy, and we helped young people specifically start businesses and level up in their entrepreneurship journey. Just 3.5 months ago, I actually merged and partnered with a company called Factor. And so I joined their founding team, and we're on a quest to build a better on-ramp for teenagers after high school. A few of the things that we've noticed and we see is that people are getting into too much college debt. And one of the tragedies of that is that after college, about half of college graduates still graduate having no idea what they want to do with their career, with their time. And so it's a really expensive way to stay wandering and confused about your life.
Exactly. Yes. And then you feel pigeonholed because you have that debt that's following you. It makes it worse because you really can't go out and pursue a lot of things that you probably could have without that debt.
And so our goal with Factor is, how can we help younger individuals gain exposure to a broad variety of career paths and life options that they have in front of them, and then equip them with the skills and the experience and the network that they need to succeed within that.
That's great.
And coming full circle, just because today we're talking about engaging and gamification, the way that ties in is that as a young learner, Young learners are really experts at playing.
Oh, yeah.
They're professionals at it. They are so much better than us as adults at playing. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. We've lost the art. We have to retrain ourselves.
Yeah, we have. And they're the best at it. And so one of the challenges that we have as educators helping our young learners is to speak their language, which is how can we play and turn playing into learning? Yes. And when we do that, then we can really start a beautiful journey of learning to a lifelong success.
Yeah, that's so true. And yes, I was telling parents this last weekend, you have to play more, and wish I had the time to explain to them how they could change that in themselves. And that's a whole separate topic, I think, to address. But just, I think just taking a little bite off and trying to do it with our kids is one step for us as well. And so I'm excited for you to share a lot more about just the power of this and how to go about doing it through some examples and things. Yeah. So if you're watching, I just want to encourage you that if you're watching on Facebook, just know that you can make comment down in the feed and we'll see that. If you're watching on YouTube, you can do the same. We'd love for you to be part of the conversation. Tell us where you're watching from. I see there's quite a few viewers on right now. And we love being live because you can be a part of this discussion as well. And if you're watching on the Empowered Homeschool Network, just know that that is linked to our YouTube channel. So try not to comment on there unless you want a discussion afterwards, because we can't see your comments unless you link to the YouTube channel and comment there. So just know that we want to make sure that you get in the conversation if you want to be. And that's how. So break it down a little bit for us, Travis, as to what is gamification?
Yeah, so gamification is, like you mentioned earlier, there is so much information. Gamification became popular about 20 years ago. And essentially what educators, and you'll see employers in the workplace starting to use these principles is because games have a magical way of drawing us in. Yeah. When we play a game, we play simply because we want to. And it draws us in, enjoy it.
Right.
And so when we say gamification, essentially what we're talking about is giving game-like principles to tasks that aren't typically thought of as being games. And so we want to get a little bit specific, and we'll chat about this today, what are those different attributes that make games irresistibly fun, right? They pull us in.
Right.
Can't help but play again and again and again. What are those attributes that make games so fun, and how can we incorporate those attributes into the activities that we have to do every day? And if we can do that successfully, then we can start to build experiences that not only our kids, but that we ourselves will also enjoy.
Yeah. It's kind of like an internal reward built into the activity instead of just this, you know, I'll do this monotonous activity that I don't want to do, and then I'll be rewarded afterwards. It's kind of the incorporation of that instead. So that's awesome. So, yeah. Well, we've got a couple of viewers. I see Creative Minds Homeschooling has joined us from Minnesota. I only know that you live in Minnesota because you worked at my booth at the Minnesota conference this weekend. And then we have another viewer on from Facebook watching from Northern Virginia. So thanks, ladies, for joining us. So I'm going to pull up your slides because I can't remember exactly what you wanted to share on there. And we'll kind of... dive in. We have one viewer also on Facebook that asked, so are you going to provide a game list or examples of good games we could use? I personally don't like games. I struggle with this. So do you want to answer that question?
Yeah, I would love to answer that question. So today I won't provide a list of games to buy and then use. What I'll do instead is I want to give you principles so that you can begin to craft your own games out of the situations that you have in your home. So I'll tell you a few stories today of examples of how you can do that. Some examples that I will share are, chores turn into games. I'll share an example of math. Yay. Game. And another example also of the value of, feedback and response turn into a game. So I'll give you those attributes that you can apply to any situation and any scenario. Essentially, how can you create your own games at home to help turn positive outcomes enjoyable?
Yeah, that is so powerful. That it isn't just this. Let's take this and put it into an environment that is static, but it's something it's so changing and morphing within your house, and the games can change along with it because it's something that you're just implementing in the midst of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I couldn't agree more. It's very fluid and very malleable. I'll share attributes today and I'll share principles. Mm-hmm. And I also acknowledge that within every single home, it will look a little bit different.
Yes,
because when done correctly, it's crafted around the needs of the learner, right?
And so
I won't ever try to get too specific because it requires a lot of knowledge on the specific learner once we dive into specifics. But we'll stay high and reveal and talk about the principles and attributes that you need to be successful.
Great. Yeah. So it looks like we're going to start up with the principles.
Yeah. So we're there. We're on our first page. So the principles of engaging activities. And so you'll notice that here I don't have only gamification. We're not talking solely about the principles of gamification. Mm-hmm. Gamification falls within all that we're talking about today.
Okay.
So awesome. Principles of engaging activities. Mm-hmm. First and foremost is piquing curiosity. Secondly, is that principle of gamification. Mm-hmm. Third, are tasks and rules that are clearly understood. Fourth is allowing autonomy. And fifth, powerful debriefs. So I want to talk about each and every one of these. And each of these are so crucial and so vital to creating meaningful experiences and creating powerful opportunities to learn for your children. And I'll talk a little bit about these principles and sometimes where we fall short within them.
That sounds great.
Okay, so if we want to go move forward, the first thing I'd like to chat about a little bit on the next slide is a powerful learning begins with a question spawned from curiosity and wonder. The interesting thing about learning is it is the exact same for toddlers as it is for adults and anywhere and everywhere in between. So if you think about the toddler, the two-year-old, right, where they ask why every 5 seconds.
Right. Yes.
they're naturally curious and they're craving information. Mm-hmm. And so they learn at incredible rates. Right? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Their knowledge compounds and it doubles, it seems, every minute of the day.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But we as adults are the exact same way. We actually don't learn until we recognize something that piques our curiosity. And we wonder, no way. Or we might wonder, how is that possible? Right?
Mm-hmm.
Think of the last time that you Googled something and you looked up and you read a blog article or that you decided to read a book or you decided on a documentary. The reason that we decided to do one of those actions is because our curiosity was piqued and we wanted to know something.
Right.
We as adults almost never learn things because we have to. Sometimes for work we do.
Right. Yep.
Mm-hmm. But outside of that sphere, we only learn things because we want to. And that really is the core of learning is once you're curious about it and you crave an answer, that's what's going to send you on a journey to learn. Children are the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we expect children to learn not out of curiosity. A different way to say this is we allot have the mindset of kids will learn this because they have to, because it's for their well-being, it's for their good.
Yeah, but they don't recognize that.
Right. A four-year-old or a five-year-old and even up to a 15-year-old, they have no awareness that learning multiplication is good for them in the long run.
Right.
And so learning because they have to doesn't equate with them the same way that it doesn't equate with us as adults, right? We don't like learning because we have to.
Right.
They want to learn because it's enjoyable. So the best way for us to do that as parents and as educators is to create activities and prompts that pique their curiosity. And so one example that I like to give with this is one of the activities that I like to give to participants in some of our programs is we send them out to do an activity called Bigger or Better. Essentially, if you haven't heard of that activity, you start with something small. Think of a paperclip or a rock. And their task is to go out and make trades with neighbors for something bigger or better at every home. And by the end of the activity, they'll come back with something much larger and much greater in value. Just to give you a reference, I've had teenagers come back after 1 week returning with something that was valued at $10,000.
Wow.
It's amazing and it's wonderful. Here's what I've learned is there's two ways to do this. One is, and you can feel the difference as I give these examples. The first would be to say, hey, here's this activity. You're going to go and trade things to get more than this rock. Good luck. Or there's a way that we can set the stage that really piques their curiosity. That way would look something like this. This week, I'm going to send you off on a challenge. That challenge is to turn this rock into something far greater and far better. Teens in your same situation at your very same age have come back just 5 days later with items that are valued at $10,000. Can I tell you how they did it? All of a sudden, right, as a participant, your curiosity is going crazy.
Right, exactly. Yep.
And so piquing curiosity is the first step always. That how can we provide a prompt or a narrative that helps pique the curiosity and earns the interest of our kids and our teens.
Well, that's yes, exactly. Yeah. It kind of gets them out of their stagnant little box of yeah, this is just another thing I have to do. And and they're not even relating to it. I mean, this gives them sort of that relationship, but even more so the desire to dive in.
Yeah.
So that's great.
Absolutely. Yep. And so if we continue on, to actually let's jump this slide and go to the next one. So once we piqued curiosity, this is when we can get to the beauty of gamifying. So we used this definition before. Gamification is defined as the use of design elements characterized for games in non-game contexts.
Right.
So I want to share with you just one example of how I've used this principle in a large context in a chore.
Okay.
So a couple of years ago, I was we were actually doing sprinklers in a large field. And as part of this process, right, we were getting ready to plant grass. And so we were partaking of the tedious task of picking up rocks out of this field.
Yeah.
If any of you have picked up rocks out of a field, you'll know.
They're never ending.
Never.
They're heavy.
Right? It is. It's unbelievable. And it's tedious and it's hot in the sun. And there I was. I was out picking up rocks with a group of boys. And it was exhausting. And there we went. And it seemed like the minutes were dragging on. And at the time, I was actually learning about this concept of applying game principles to non-game activities. And so halfway through, I thought to myself, like, I'm going to try an experiment. I'm going to see if this really works. And so there we are, me and these boys, and we're all kind of griping, right? It's kind of miserable out there. And I tell them, I say, hey, we have about 100 yards left of this field. And we were each taking about 3 feet wide, and we were just walking backwards, picking up rocks as we went across the field. So I said, we have about 100 yards left. I bet that I can get more rocks and fill up my wheelbarrow faster than you can fill up yours. And that was such a novice attempt to apply gamification, right? There weren't really any rules. There was no reward. There was a lot that was lacking in the scenario. But I'll tell you what, the look in those boys' eyes, they lit up, and we started going at it, and we're picking up rocks and picking up rocks. And all of a sudden, not only were we picking up more rocks, we were more efficient than before, but we were moving way faster through the field. And the crazy part about this is we got about halfway done with that row that we were doing. And someone yelled from the property and said, "Hey, lunch is ready." And the boys, not me, said, "Okay, we're almost done."
Oh, they wanted to keep going.
Isn't that amazing? Because we were playing, right? And it was a competition. And that is just that's just one example of how powerful it is when we add aspects of a game into a work-life setting. Right. Now, I will say this, because for those of you who have tried to motivate your kids to do chores before, and you may have tried things like this, you might be thinking to yourself, like, well, that's a pretty short-term solution. And what I'll say at this point is the reason that that tactic wouldn't work week after week after week after week is because we're not employing enough of the attributes of what it means to truly gamify. What I'll say here is we need to go one level deeper, and I hope I'm not getting too complex.
No, this is good, because I think a lot of parents have maybe used this and go, well, how do I keep this going?
Right.
Because yes, it seems to work, like you said, on a temporary basis, but yes, if we want them to do their chores every week or on a daily basis, or even just brush their teeth, how do we turn this into a game?
Right, exactly. Okay, so there's two layers to this, right? The first layer is us asking, okay, what things are found in a game that make a game fun? So what we might say is, well, games seem to have competition, which I employed in the field, right?
Yeah.
Therefore, I'm going to try and turn this into a competition. We might say, well, games have a leaderboard. I can see who's in the lead and who's losing. All games seem to have that. All games also seem to have rules, right? And so we can sort of pick that way, but that's only one layer deep, and we need to go two layers deep.
Okay.
Because the more important question is, what have games figured out that draw people to them? And so what we start seeing there is people don't play a game because it has a leaderboard, right?
Right. Yeah.
People don't play a game because it has rules. They play a game for different reasons. And those reasons get a little bit deeper. And what I'm referring to is that games provide a deeper meaning. They provide an epic meaning. So if you've ever seen some of your kids play a video game, a lot of time the introduction to the video game will be a narration, a narrative. Yes,
exactly.
Is laying the framework of this vast new world that they've been called to save.
Yes. So it's like a mission.
And so that's something that all great games, beyond rules and leaderboards, all great games provide deep meaning. It feels like an epic call to action, right?
Right, yeah.
All great games satisfy another thing that is deeply human, is deeply innate in human motivation, which is our longing to be connected to other people.
Yes.
You'll notice the
community.
The community, right? The games that have been vastly successful throughout time are games that connect people to others, right? Whether that's sporting events or the game of chess and checkers, right? Games that stand the test of time are ones that provide social connection. Another is that the challenges provided in the game are both meaningful and genuinely difficult, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
A game where the challenges are too easy, we get bored really fast.
Yeah. Yep.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And another two principles are that there is some aspect of unpredictability and curiosity in the game, and that there is scarcity of time and or resources in the game.
Oh yeah. So you have to draw something from yourself versus it's all provided for you.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I'll give a few examples of what this looks like in a learning environment.
Two
examples really quickly. One, because we're all familiar with it lately, is Wordle, right? We all log in and we log in. No one's telling us to log into Wordle. We're not coerced. We don't win anything, but we all love it. And if you're not familiar with Wordle,
I'm not, but I'm sure probably my viewers are. I'm so disconnected.
Oh, you're great. So Wordle is a word game. So if you're familiar with Sudoku, similar to Sudoku.
Okay.
But the difference is that in Wordle, you have five guesses and the word is only five letters long.
Okay.
And if you get to guess one word at a time, and Wordle will tell you based on the first word that you guessed, which letters are in the correct answer and which of those letters lie in the correct location where you guess them. And so essentially it's just a fun word game. And this game is it provides meaning in the sense that you get to prove and show yourself that you're intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And that combines with step two because it provides the social connection because it's the same word being revealed for every player that day, right?
And okay.
So Peggy, if you and I were to do today's Wordle, we would both be able to talk about the word and how long it took us to guess that
word. Yeah, okay.
And then third is that it's genuinely difficult. It's difficult to get the challenge. It's unpredictable. The word changes every day. And the time closes. So you only have five guesses, but you can only access that game for 24 hours at a time, that round for 24 hours.
Okay.
So that's just one example of how we see that, how we see these principles laid out in a game. And it's the reason that we love it because it provides those things for us. Right. And so we'll get to an example or two in just a minute of how we do this in learning. But it's all about connecting to deeper meaning, connecting to other people, having social connection, challenges that are difficult and also unpredictable, and a scarce amount of time or resources.
Right.
Once we hit this ground level, then we can start to talk about, okay, is it a competition? Do we have a scoreboard? And then, of course, what we'll talk about next is, do we have clear tasks and rules that are easy to understand. So moving forward, I would love to share an example with you about a way that I've applied these principles in a simple challenge. A couple of years ago, I was wrestling with the concept. Again, I was teaching entrepreneurship, and one of the phases that was the most difficult was the finances, helping teens understand expenses and revenues and profits and how much money do they need to put away every month versus how much can they go and buy candy with, right? All of these questions. That was a really difficult portion of our curriculum because it's math, right? And all of a sudden, there's a lot of insecurities tied up in math and it's difficult to learn. And if you don't understand it, then what does that mean about you, right? And so it was our most difficult unit in the curriculum. And so the way that we gamified this this portion of our curriculum is that we went ahead and we ended up starting a competition. And the competition was who can make the best tasting lemonade at the cheapest cost per cup.
Oh.
And so because all of a sudden this is a competition, Mm-hmm. And because this is a chance for them to connect with their peers, right? Typically a math equation is something that you put your head down and you try and figure out on your own. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden we turn this into a fun social interaction setting where you're trying to create a lemonade cup. It's all about how good your lemonade is. It's not actually about the numbers anymore, right?
Right. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And so the teens go on and they're trying to make their lemonade. And about 10 minutes in, you see light bulbs starting to click on for each of them, mm-hmm. where they say, well, wait a minute. How do I figure out how much my cup of lemonade costs?
Right. Yeah, that's an important factor there.
Yeah, it's an important factor. And so there's a huge difference in saying like, hey, today we're gonna have a play a game to see who can make the best cup of lemonade for the cheapest cost. And mm-hmm. today we're gonna talk about expenses and revenues, right?
Right. Well, and on top of that, when you introduced the factor of the lemonade taste first, and then they thought about the money later, they were already fully engaged in the process to the point that it would be difficult to back out because they had invested already in that.
Yes.
So that was very wise.
Yes, absolutely. And so you can see this as well. So they start to wonder, well, how do I know how much my cup of lemonade costs?
Mm-hmm.
And so then we start looking, okay, well, you use two lemons. Each of those lemons cost 30 cents. And mm-hmm. they start writing it down. And, oh, you used a cup of sugar. Okay, well, that sugar costs this much. And they're mm-hmm. the ones who do the math and figure it out. All of a sudden, solving that math equation was mm-hmm. integral to the goal that they wanted to accomplish.
Right. Exactly.
So yep. Mm-hmm. It became something they cared about deeply because mm-hmm. A, they wanted to win.
Right.
But pointing back to that idea of it needs to be tied to a deeper meaning. So mm-hmm. for us in our entrepreneurship curriculum, everything we did pointed to how can we be a successful entrepreneur? First, mm-hmm. we need to think like an entrepreneur and we need to understand our business like an entrepreneur.
Right.
And we have to have a great product. Right? That's what it takes mm-hmm. to be an entrepreneur.
Right.
And so creating, being able to create the best flavored lemonade at the lowest cost mm-hmm. was deeply connected to their purpose and yes, the meaning of the exactly. of the journey that we were taking them on.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. so this for me is a really simple demonstration of how we took something that is mundane and tedious and typically viewed as not fun, especially mm-hmm. to young people. Right. And we were able to turn it into a game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And just to recap briefly, the way that we did that, so we tied it to deeper meaning, their deeper meaning of finding purpose as an entrepreneur and being able to create great products at a low cost.
Mm-hmm.
We provided social connection. So all of a sudden they were chatting with their peers while they were doing it and competing mm-hmm. against their peers to create delicious lemonade.
Right.
And we made the challenge difficult in that there was a short time constraint. So they were hustling and spilling lemonade and sugar all over the place. Warning, stuff like this can be messy.
Yes. Oh, good learning is always messy.
Yeah. We actually made it unpredictable. So if you remember that fourth principle, we made it unpredictable, piquing mm-hmm. their curiosity in right. that.
Yeah.
Some of them got to be the judges, but there was blind judging. And so they would pick which one they liked best, not knowing who provided the lemonade.
Right.
And so we created this whole scenario with a bunch of attributes of the game mm-hmm. just to make learning about revenues and finances much more enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's awesome.
Yes. So this is what we've talked about piquing curiosity and gamifying. So adding mm-hmm. attributes of game to a non-game like setting.
Right.
If we go to our next slide, mm-hmm. one of the key ingredients of this, if you think about any game, we talk about establishing tasks and rules that are clearly communicated and easy exactly. to understand.
Mm-hmm.
One example of this, and we could talk about any game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's really interesting the way that young people and most people, I should say, whether they're young or old, we mm-hmm. don't necessarily love rules They feel defining and they feel restrictive. The interesting thing about rules, once it's in a game setting, is that all of a sudden the rules are necessary to play the game.
Right. Yes. Because otherwise the fairness goes out the window. And you want what you're doing to be, you know, as effective as it can be. And it's got to be fair across the board with everybody else. And 100%. So there's some sort of comfort in that. Yeah. Yes.
There's comfort in that. And it's actually what makes the game fun. So the more that kids play games, the more they'll resonate with this. But you try to guide your kids through a game of Capture the Flag where there are no rules.
Oh, yeah.
And go ahead and see how much fun they have. And the answer is it will turn into a fight really fast.
Right, exactly.
It will be an utter mess. It'll be disaster. And so we need to do the same things when we're setting up these types of experiences and challenges for our kids and our teens is to set up clear tasks to be accomplished, clear milestones, and rules for accomplishing them. So one example that I'll give in regards to the lemonade stand activity. So the clear rules that we gave them, first of all, the metrics of you're trying to have the cheapest cost. You can only use these specific ingredients that we have laid out. And you only have 2 minutes. Ready, set, go. There's very specific rules. And so if someone tries to step out of line, someone tries to cheat, then they're holding each other accountable, right?
But having
these rules in place helps it feel more like a game in a competition and less like a boring task that someone's making me do, right?
Right, exactly. They become internally motivated quite quickly.
Yes. So the next example, the next story that I'd like to tell it will start here. And so something so very important as we talk about autonomy. So our next step, once we provide rules and tasks clearly communicated, I think this is maybe one of the most important steps that we sometimes fall short of as educators and as parents is allowing for the autonomy for teens to be able to act for themselves.
Exactly. So, yeah. Because we always think there's a set way of doing something. And we want to just like put it on top of our kids.
Yes, absolutely. So much. And that's a very natural desire. And it's actually very difficult to resist doing that, right?
Right.
This is one of the reasons that I love this process of gamification is that we get to encourage and invite our kids to participate in great learning. And we still honor them as an individual that gets to make their own choices.
Right.
So we pique their curiosity. We provide a really fun and game-like atmosphere. We provide the rules and the milestones to be accomplished.
Right.
And then we say, all right, like, are you in? Are you going to do it? You want to play? And I love this quote that says, the desire to create is one of the deepest yearnings of the human soul.
We were made to create.
Yeah, we love to create. And it's so natural to our nature. That if we as educators do a good enough job at piquing their interests and pointing them in a direction of how to satisfy that interest and make it fun enough through the gamification process, they'll explore. The thing that we have to be open to as adults is sometimes young people will explore and they'll decide that it's not that interesting anymore after just a few days.
Right.
Let's say that we're trying to get them really interested about United States history. And they get through George Washington and they get through John Adams and they're like, you know what, Mom, that was cool and all, but that's just not doing it for me anymore.
Right.
And depending on the age of your child, they probably won't communicate it that clearly to you.
Right. It'll come out as behavior or something a lot less desirable than a nice conversation.
but they will communicate that message to you one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
Where they'll say, you know what, I'm actually done with this. It's not interesting to me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's our responsibility to a certain extent to allow our young people to dive deep into their interests.
Mm-hmm.
And in some situations, and this is personal to every parent and every family, but in some situations, it's even important to say, you know what, this isn't interesting to you right now. Let's say you're not interested in U.S. presidents like I want you to be, but mm-hmm. you do seem to really be interested in space and the first trip to the moon and Apollo 11, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so rather than try and cram you into this direction of John Adams, like I want you to be,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to, instead of trying to pique your curiosity in something you're not already curious about, I'm actually just going to honor your autonomy and I'm going to start planting curiosity where they're already curious. And I guess a better way to say that is if you're already curious and you're wanting to learn more about the man on the moon and mm-hmm. space travel,
right?
What can I do as a learner and an educator to start planting seeds that will help you be curious and dive deep into other aspects of that? And you can think of how exciting that is in the realms of mathematics and science and physics. There's a lot of exciting directions that can be taken from there. Honoring the autonomy of your young person and giving them things they're already curious about.
Exactly. Yes. And they may learn who was president during what time of the space era it was and what that president did to make that, you know, either good, you know, move in the fast direction or slow it down. So you can still build in, you know, some of those things, but that the whole, you know, child-led unschooling really dives deep into this autonomy portion. And it does make educating easier, especially for kids that are very driven or undriven by learning that is not something that they're curious about.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so that goes down a wormhole a little bit of the unschooling and all those beautiful philosophies.
Mm-hmm.
For today's purposes, though, I almost got a little ahead of myself. For today's purposes, right, talking about, okay, I feel like it is important for my teen or my child to learn these skills. Mm-hmm. Let's gamify it and make it fun.
Right.
So one example that I'd love to give, looking back a little bit at the specific rules and then giving them autonomy with those rules,
mm-hmm.
and how you can really, really nail those two things together. So with one group that I was leading, it was really important to us. We wanted our teens to start thinking independently. Mm-hmm. We wanted them to start getting the skill set to think for themselves and to know the skill set of how to find your way in the world on your own, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the way that we did that is we paired up teens into groups of three or four. And we created a scavenger hunt throughout, I'm near Salt Lake City in Utah.
Okay.
So we set up a scavenger hunt in downtown Salt Lake City. And they had 4 hours to get as many points as they wanted. So within the scavenger hunt, there were 50 destinations. And each destination had a different number of points they would get to go and take a picture in front of that destination.
Mm-hmm.
And then whichever team was able to acquire the most points throughout the four hours would win the competition.
Yeah.
The twist was that they would have an adult to be with them just to ensure safety.
Right.
But that adult wasn't allowed to open their mouths unless in an emergency.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so if you actually want to go to the next slide, you can see there we are. You can see my face in the bottom. It's actually chopped off below my nose right there.
Oh.
You can kind of see me smirking.
Mm-hmm.
So what was happening in that picture is I'm with that group of teens. They're all aged 12 to 15.
Okay.
We had just gotten onto a downtown tram.
Mm-hmm.
And we had boarded the tram going in the wrong direction.
Oh, no. And you couldn't say anything.
Yeah. So you can see on one or two of the kids' faces, there's a decent level of panic happening.
Right.
And so what I love about this experience is we set up very clear rules to ensure the teen's safety, one of which is that they couldn't separate and that I would be with them. Right. So we ensured their safety. We set up rules as far as, hey, you're trying to get to this many. There's a time constraint. You're only going to be out there this long.
Right.
And then we allowed them to be completely autonomous. 100% autonomous. And I mean, even to the extent that some of those groups chose to only go to a few destinations and they chose to sit at a food court and eat ice cream cones for 40 minutes, right? And that is so hard as the adult to let that happen.
Right.
And to not say, oh, this isn't a great use of your time, right? It's really hard. Or it's really difficult. You can see on my smirk in that picture, it's really difficult to know we are going the wrong way in this train.
Exactly.
And these 12-year-olds are completely lost. It's really, really difficult to allow them to make their own choices and learn from their own choices.
Right. Yeah.
But here's the beauty of this process, right? Because we have gone through the care to set it up. We've piqued their curiosity. We ourselves have set up a game-like structure where we know because of the rules we've set in place, they're going to be safe.
Right.
And we know that there's a sense of structure so that it's not pure chaos. Then we, at that point, get to sit back and observe.
Right. Yeah.
And they will mess up and they'll fumble. And sometimes they won't execute the way that we hope they will. Sometimes they'll execute even better than we hope they will. And that's part of it, right? Is us allowing for that level of autonomy. This to me is, it's really easy to miss the mark on this when we don't allow any autonomy and we try to cram things down our kids' throat. The other way I think we can go wrong here is when we say, I, as a parent, will be completely uninvolved. I won't do one through three, and I'm just going to trust that their autonomy will take them through.
Right. Yes.
Both of those are dangerous, right?
That's a very good point.
And so when I focus on and suggest autonomy, it is within the structure of, okay, I'm going to set up, I'm going to pique your curiosity, I'm going to establish a game-like structure, and I'm going to set up some rules, and within those rules, have at it.
Right. Exactly.
Because young people, not only do they need some structure, but they actually crave it as well.
Right. Yes. And
so, definitely want to add that with that piece.
That's perfect. Because I think, we do either lean one way or the other as a parent. And it's finding that safe middle ground where the learning is optimal. That sometimes just takes a lot of trial and error on our part as well as, just allowing our kids to either fail or be able to learn on their own without as much structure as we want to provide.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's so much better to do it before they get out of the house, because this is going to happen when they become an adult anyways. And I don't think we often think of that. I've got all adult children now. And yes, it's either let them fail safely in these types of scenarios, or they're going to fail because they've never been in these types of scenarios and they're going to have to learn in much harder situations how to be autonomous.
Absolutely. Which brings us so nicely to our next point, Peggy, is that we do not learn from experience. We learn from reflecting on experiences. This, to me, is potentially one of the most overlooked truths of education. Because, like I said, a lot of people are actually pretty good at the autonomy. And we hear all this time the adage that you learn from your failures or you learn from your mistakes. It's actually those sentences aren't actually true. We don't learn from failure. We learn when we reflect on our failure.
from the right perspective too.
Exactly.
Some people can look at those failures in a very bad context and never learn from them.
Absolutely right. And to your point, some people, rather than learn from failure, they become bitter. And,
yeah, exactly.
Go into downward spirals rather than learning from them. And one thing that is so important about helping our young people in their progression is that young people have incredible capacity. Their capacity is huge. Mm-hmm. What they lack is experience.
Yes. Yeah.
And so our job is to give them experiences and then give them a chance to reflect on those experiences. Going back to my example of the Amazing Race, right? And we're going around Salt Lake City and we're getting on trams going the wrong way. And they lose because they sat down and ate a sandwich for 30 minutes when they could have hurried a little faster, right?
Right.
So rather than me get upset at them and try and control them during this phase of autonomy, I get to just sit back and even chuckle, right? I'm on the assuming that when it's all over, I take the chance as their guide and mentor and to sit down with them and reflect and say, okay, what happened out there? These are the three questions I'd recommend, by the way. What happened in that activity?
Yeah.
What does it mean? Right. Does it actually matter? Like, does it matter that we went the wrong way? In this example, the kids would have yelled, of course it mattered. We lost a lot of time. Right. And then for me, because I'm not trying to push an agenda on them at this point. Right.
Yeah.
I get to say, oh, how interesting. Yeah, you're right. It would have been faster. And then the third question is, how does that affect your future? Or the way I would ask it in that context is, so how would you do it different next time?
Yes.
How would you make sure you didn't get on the tram going the wrong way? And they would come up with some beautiful answer, right?
Yeah.
But that type of reflection is the way that they actually learn. And that, by the way, is the same for adults, right? We learn when we reflect upon our experiences. One example that I want to give, and then we'll tie it all together, the full loop. This past Sunday. So I like you, am very religious. I'm a spiritual person, and I am a volunteer in our youth group. And so during Sundays, I sit with the youth classes and when we're doing scripture study together, right, I'm with the youth group. And sometimes, as you might imagine, that's really chaotic.
Right.
And sometimes I sort of sit back and chuckle and I think to myself, you know what, if we get 5 minutes out of a 45-minute discussion that is enlightening and inspiring, I'm going to count that as a win, you know?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Here was an interesting point is because I was sort of wrestling with this idea of, I really want to take that 5 minutes of inspiring and take that to 10 or 20 or even imagine the full time being inspired. And I was wrestling with that and it occurred to me that, you know what, I haven't given space for this youth group to debrief and to have reflection moments about their own experience. So this actually happened this most recent Sunday. And I, with 5 minutes left of our scripture conversation, we paused there and I asked it was a group of just boys, teenage boys. So I asked the boys, is it okay with you guys if we do a quick reflection on what we just experienced? And they were like, yeah, they were all down. And two of the boys were in charge of leading a discussion and all of the other boys, there were 17 of them, were participants.
Okay.
And I just posed the question. I said, okay, so here's how I would suggest we do a reflection. I would suggest that the boys who led the discussion say one thing that you thought went really well and then one thing that you think could maybe improve. And then I want to hear from the boys in the group, what's one way you think you could improve as participants for next time? And Peggy, it was amazing and it was so beautiful because you had 16 and 17-year-old boys talking to each other saying, you know what, we were really distracted a lot of the time. And I bet we would get more out of this if we weren't cracking jokes. And I bet if we weren't on our phones, I bet it would have gone better too. And so all of a sudden you have 16-year-olds telling each other the stuff that I want to tell them.
So much more effective than you telling them that.
Right. Where when an adult says it, it sounds condemning and there's a level of guilt associated with it.
Right.
But they, right, like they have the awareness that they were able to, upon reflection, they were able to come up with that on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is so very powerful, especially in that setting, but in all the settings where learning and education is the priority, is to keep in mind that learning doesn't ever happen by force.
Yes.
It only happens when people want to. And so no matter how tempted I was week after week after week to say, all right, boys, quiet down. Like we gotta practice. This is important, you know? That wouldn't have helped. In fact, I think it just would have pushed them away.
Yeah.
The thing that helps is providing a setting, creating clear rules and tasks, letting them be autonomous, right? Letting them try to lead conversations, even when you observe it crashing and burning a little bit.
Right. Yeah.
And then give them space to reflect. And so that's the last example. We're coming up on our hour.
Yeah.
These principles of gamification, of piquing curiosity, gamifying or adding these game-like structures to things that we don't typically think of as games, that's being tied to epic meaning and a narrative and social connection and uniqueness of opportunity experience and genuinely difficult challenges, right? Adding those type of gamification attributes. Then we make sure there's clear rules and responsibilities that are clearly communicated. And then we give autonomy and we debrief on their action it took while it was autonomous.
Right.
If we follow those principles, you're going to win. It won't be as clean as you might want it to look. Sometimes it's really messy, especially during those periods of autonomy.
But
that's where learning happens. And I know that if you've caught glimpses of that, you're nodding your head right now. Those moments of autonomy followed by reflection. Sometimes you'll get emotional listening to the things that your kids will say. And they'll communicate things that you're praying that they learn.
Right. Oh, that's so true. Yeah. I mean, you can think of this as, well, this is just going to take so much of my time, but I want you to remember that these are the things when I've done things like this with my kids as adults, they still remember these things because it is so ingrained in the experience that we shared together and they shared with one another. And they're lessons that have gone so deep into who they are versus just lessons, you know, we opened up a book and did something and then we forgot the next hour. You know, you remember and it's something, you know, like I'm sure all the students on the tram going the wrong way, they will never forget that experience. And some of the things that they learned just in that afternoon will stick with them for a lifetime. Because you allowed them to explore and to learn and then discuss that and it became meaningful to them. It's so important.
Right. Couldn't agree more.
Yeah. So we had one guest while we were talking, Creative Minds Homeschooling, said, I'm horrible at games also, never liked them as a child, but I have two kids who love video games. Well, I hope that this hour, because she commented on that towards the beginning, that this has encouraged you that... just because you don't like video games, which I don't particularly either, doesn't mean that you can't include this concept of gamifying school and experiences and things like that into your schedule. Travis, you made it so accessible. I know we talked about it at the beginning, and I just want to thank you for the time that you put into crafting your slides and your stories, because that really makes a huge lasting impression for my listeners and viewers too.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for having me. It's definitely an audience and a cause that I care a lot about. And so I appreciate your time. Thanks for having me on the show and looking forward to more conversations in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And Allie, was watching on Facebook, said, "Link to the video will be available later." Yes, we'll pin it to the top of our Facebook page for the week, but also it will be on our YouTube channel indefinitely. And on Sunday, it'll be turned into a podcast on our podcast channel. So a variety of different ways. And then next week also, we'll take 4 shorter segments that my editing team will work on, and they'll be reposted onto YouTube and then shared across our social media. So lots of different ways to interact with this content that Travis gave us, because you don't want to miss any of it. And definitely go back and watch the whole video. And we have one other viewer from YouTube that says, "Thank you so much. Such great information. Thanks for joining us, Audra. We appreciate it." So this wraps up our discussion on gamification and more and beyond. Engaged learning, I guess, is kind of what we dove into today. And again, thank you, Travis, and the work that you're doing. I know we're going to be talking more about your new endeavor and getting that information onto our website so that you can definitely take advantage if you have a high schooler and are looking at different alternatives to dive into that too, because we definitely need those options for our students. So we'll be in touch about that. And definitely check out all of our resources on spedhomeschool.com. And thank you to our viewers. I know we got someone even saying, "Thank you, your great inputs. All the best from homeschooling family in Puerto Rico." Well, thanks for watching in Puerto Rico. We appreciate you joining our conversation. So, awesome. Next week, we're going to talk about road schooling as we continue this topic. And I haven't even got it onto our schedule yet because I just confirmed it a couple of days ago. So you want to join us then and talk about if you're going to take a vacation or maybe you're going to go longer homeschooling your RV. I've done it twice. and just how do you learn while you're out and about and maybe in small cramped spaces while you're living, but yet you have the whole great outdoors to learn in. So we're going to explore that next week, and I hope you'll join us then. But thanks again, Travis, and thanks again, all of you. We appreciate you, and we'll see you next week. Same time, same place. God bless everybody. Bye.
This is Perseus Poku, host of the Sound Reasoning Ministry podcast. Learn how to share and defend your faith by listening to us weekly. Subscribe at lifeaudio.com.